Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, how do planets form? Researchers at the University of Galway have discovered the likely site of a new planet in formation up to a few times the mass of Jupiter. It might give us some clues. Dr. Christian Ginsky is a lecturer at the School of Natural Sciences at the University of Galway. He joins me now. Welcome to the programme, Christian. This is something that I thought I knew, but I'm reading more about it. It's not as straightforward as I thought it was. So how typically do we understand it is that planets form?
So you're right. There is a popular image how it works, and then there is how we are understanding it scientifically, which is not very well, actually. So the general image is that we have small, tiny dust particles. We start out with those. It's kind of like sand on the beach, sort of little sand grains, and they start sticking together very slowly over the course of millions of years and start building up larger and larger bodies, and eventually you get a rocky planet like our Earth. So that was the picture that we had for the longest time.
Yeah, and the idea was that sort of gravity, the mass of this sort of sand sort of pulled all these bits together and slowly stuck together. And then as they got more mass, there was a pressure and gravity, and that sort of created a core and so on. And that's how things built out.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So this is how we generally envision this to form. But there's many problems with that, because we when dust particles start to stick together, they can also collide with each other and destroy each other again. So there's a lot of barriers to that, actually, when you look into the details. So the devil is really in the details there. And so we find that the time that it takes to make a planet that way is typically longer than we observe planet-forming disks, so the sites where planets are actually forming, where they collect all of this material, the time that they exist. So that's a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Longer to build the planet than the planet formation site is around.
Right. So do we have a lot of planet formation theories, or is that not yet explainable?
So we have different theories there. So we think that especially the more massive planets, so gas giants, something like Jupiter, our own solar system, they form maybe much more rapidly than we think. So we have these planet formation sites. Those are disks of gas and dust surrounding very young stars. So it's almost like when you look at some of those images that you see, it might almost look like looking into the center of a hurricane or something. It looks very, very dynamic. Lots of things moving in there. And what we're thinking is that sometimes there's clumps building up in there. Now, how we get a clump, many different theories. But once you have a clump, you can make this disk collapse under its own gravity really quickly, really fast, within a time frame of maybe just a few thousand years. And
wow.
That is how you can make a gas giant really quick. So we think that this is one of the formation channels for very massive objects that we are finding.
Okay, so because that totally sounds like a much shorter time than I thought planets took to form, which I thought we were talking hundreds of thousands of years. How do you test something like this in the real world with observations?
Right. So what we need to do is we need to observe the sites for planet formation. So these gas and dust disks that I've mentioned before. We can do this with many different telescopes, but only in the past, I'd say in the past 10 years or so, we have the technology to actually make images of those sites where we can really see how are they structured, what's going on in there. Before that, we were largely limited to just observing them in spectra, so where you get sort of different colors of light from a star, and you put it through a prism, and you get kind of like a rainbow, and then you have to interpret what's going on there. But now we have the technology to get images there, and so we are observing the structures mostly in there, and the structures can tell us a little bit how planets are forming and moving around in those disks.
Before we talk about that, how do you identify a growing planet? Because my understanding is it's difficult enough to find an exoplanet, let alone a planet that isn't even a planet yet, using something like spectra. How do you identify these candidates that might be planets mid-formation?
Carefully. So it's very, very difficult indeed. So the thousands of planets, so we have detected thousands of extrasolar planets at this point, more than 6,000, I think. We can basically say that any star that you observe at the night sky very likely has planets around it at this point. So that's pretty cool. But those are all old stars. So those are systems that are very old, very long after their formation. In young systems, very difficult because all the typical methods that we're using, which rely on somehow observing the star and looking that it does something unexpected, more or less, they don't work so well for young stars because young stars are very active. That there's lots of coronal mass ejections going on there. They are just like, you know, like a juvenile star. They're just acting up a lot. So that means that...
Acting up teenagers, yeah.
Yeah, really, very much so. So that means we cannot rely on those methods. So the only way that we can find these very young protoplanets is by imaging, pretty much. So we actually have to make an image of a little dot of light next to the star. And for that, we need the largest telescopes that we have right now available. Otherwise, you cannot separate the star from the planet. So basically, you need to zoom in. And in order to zoom in, you need the larger your telescope, the more you can zoom in into the picture, basically.
Yeah.
And we are using the very large telescope in Chile. So it's an 8-meter size telescope. It's about the largest.
That's the name of the telescope, is it?
That is actually the name of the telescope, the Very Large Telescope.
Right. Okay, very good. So you're using the Very Large Telescope in Chile to take photographs of these candidate protoplanets.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose the question I was asking was, how do you identify, you know, planets in formation? But I suppose that their development is crucially linked to the age of the star, right? So if you have a very young star, you're really likely to have young planets. So it's easier to find a young star and then go look for young planets.
That is exactly right. So what we need are young stars. Young stars, as you just said, we can relatively easily identify. So there's lots of different ways to do that. And then the young planets, they are still very hot after their initial formation. So basically, think of all of this material just plunging down on each other. There's lots of friction going on there. So initially, a young planet is super hot, almost as hot as a low mass star. So then it glows very strongly in the near infrared. And this is how we can take an image of that.
Right.
Now, it gets much more complicated because we would like to take an image of that while it is still embedded in this sort of ocean of gas and dust that is surrounding that young star. And there it becomes a lot more complicated to distinguish the planet-forming disk from the actual planet.
Right.
So that becomes an entire story in itself.
Yeah. Because you want to know what is planet and what is the dust that's going to stay sort of circling the planet like we see on things like Saturn.
Exactly.
And so how old are these stars that you're looking for? And how old do you think the planets are that you're finding?
So typically the stars that I'm looking at are younger than 10 million years. So 10 million years, that sounds like a lot. For astronomers, that's basically nothing. So those are basically toddlers in terms of stars. So the disks that surround these stars, these very young stars, so these they initially collapse from a big cloud and then they form this disk around where the planets are forming in. And those disks are around for 5 to 10 million years. And that's super short in astronomical timescales.
Is it possible that the type of planet that we see in our solar system is very much determined by how quickly it was formed? Is that possible?
That is very much possible. So what we're trying to figure out right now is when we're looking at the many exoplanet systems that we have found so far, we see that there's a huge diversity in the architecture of those systems. So to give an example, there's relatively famous TRAPPIST-1 system that some people might have encountered on the internet that has 7 rocky planets, super-Earths, that are all so close to the star that they would fit inside the orbit of Mercury in our own solar system. So something completely bonkers when you think about it in terms of our own solar system.
Yeah.
So it is intricately linked to when are the planets forming, how many planets are forming, and how they interact with the disk and with each other. So it becomes really, really complex really quickly to figure out. But yeah, the formation time frame is very critical for how the final product looks like, is what we think right now.
Right, yeah. Because I'm thinking, you know, the traditional way of thinking about... or at least this is how I want to say traditional, the way I think about the planets being formed is that you have, you know, the gas giants further out because they're, you know, they're lighter elements and closer to the sun because they have more mass. They do, the rockier planets tend to exist. Is that roughly right?
Not quite, to be honest. So the gas giants are a lot more massive than our rock planets.
Right, but the elements used to create those gas giants are lighter as well.
Oh, I see. You mean because they have such a huge hull of gas around there? Well, to be honest, most comes from the same sort of materials. It's the same sort of dust, the same sort of gas that goes in the formation of both. You just need more of it, of both of it, actually, to get a gas giant versus a rocky Earth-like planet. And
but then why is Jupiter so far away from the sun if it's a lot more massive and a lot more you would think from an explosion site or closer to the site you'd have more material. Why are the Jovian planets, the much bigger, more massive planets, further away?
Well, first of all, they not always are. In many exoplanet systems, the first exoplanet system that we discovered was actually a so-called hot Jupiter system, where we have a Jupiter-like planet orbiting its star in a few days.
Oh, wow.
So not all of the systems are similar to the solar system. What we think happened in the solar system is actually that Jupiter formed somewhat closer from its current orbit to the sun, and then you have also Saturn forming at the same time. This is the so-called Grand Tack model, tacking as in a sailboat. So what happens is Jupiter is pretty massive, and it sort of pushes away all of the material in the disk. It's almost like Moses parting the Red Sea in front of it, a little bit like that. So it pushes everything aside, and then it very quickly spirals direction to the sun, together with the disk material that it pushes aside. And then Saturn comes along. It moves even a little bit faster because it cannot open a gap like this in the disk. And so the disk material sort of slow it down. It comes along. It catches up to Jupiter. They get into orbital resonance. So they sort of orbit at similar frequencies around the sun. And that stabilizes the orbit of Jupiter. And then they move back out together.
Right. Okay. I forgot the fact that they don't stay. Yeah, when they don't stay in the exact orbit of a sun, of course. That movement allows it. Yeah.
Things move around a lot after they form. It becomes really difficult, especially when you have many planets forming at the same time. They all interact with each other, and you're trying to keep track of things.
Yeah. Do you know, I'm learning so much about what I don't know, as well as the learning stuff I didn't know. So how far away are these young planets that you're looking at? And these images, what do they tell you about planet formation?
Mm-hmm. So first of all, I just want to clarify, in our current study, what we're looking at is a disk that shows indication that there's a planet in there. So we don't have the actual image of the planet yet. We are hoping to have it soon.
But you're hoping to get that, right? Okay.
Yeah, we are hoping to get that soon. So how far are they away? So the system that we have published the article about now is 430 light years away. So 430 light years, so 430 years old, the image basically that we are making there of the system. Sounds like it's far away, but actually it's not. This is our galactic backyard, basically 430 light years. So I was trying to figure out a way to highlight this earlier. So the galaxy as a whole has about 100,000 light years in diameter. So if you imagine that Ireland is as wide as the galaxy, then we are in the center of Dublin somewhere with our solar system, then the planet is still within the M50 ring. The systems that we're looking are all within the M50.
Right, okay. I mean, it's orders of magnitude when you talk about the size of our galaxy. I always think of the solar system as being, quite small, and then the Milky Way as being, a little bit bigger than that. But it's a complete misunderstanding when you think about it. It's just because the order of in which you learn about these things, you think, well, there's planet, then there's star, then there's a solar system, then there's a galaxy. But of course, the Milky Way is enormous in comparison to the solar system. Of course, we're just one dot in this enormous tapestry.
Indeed, yes.
So you're hoping to image this planet in the disk. So you found essentially a young star with some dust and matter floating around in a disk, and you think this is going to be the site for a planet formation. If you're really lucky, it could be one of the ones that does it quickly. But even still, thousands of years is probably going to be beyond your lifetime, no matter how much technology can do. So you want to get an image of this star, of this planet. How likely is it that you might find it, given that presumably this is a very blurry image made worse by the fact that there's all this dust around?
Right. So what we are trying to do now is, so we have tried everything from the ground that we can do. Mm. So with the 8-meter class telescopes, there are one or two systems where we have detected planets like that. One system in particular where we're sure about this, but this is one out of thousands of planets. So that's why we really need more of those. So what we're now trying to do is we are trying to go to space. We are using the James Webb Space Telescope, and we will look at this particular system. And because the dust is structured in a very peculiar way in this system, so it has a ring, then a huge gap, and then some sort of almost like a little hurricane-looking spiral arms in the center. We know that there must already this looks very, very comparable to theoretical models of what a planet would do to a disk. So we know this thing should have formed already. Hmm. We think it is right there. We can almost pinpoint a spot in the disk where we think it should be sitting, a little bit to the north of the star. And so we're using the superior sensitivity that James Webb has from space to try to capture an image. So basically, James Webb is actually not great in making images that are sharper than we can do from the ground, but it can image things that are a lot fainter than we can do from the ground. Yeah. And a planet is faint. So that's the thing that we try to do with James Webb. The data should be coming in within the next few months, actually.
Oh, well, we've got to catch up with you when it does. Really, really cool. Trying to identify a juvenile planet in formation at this very moment, or at least 430 years ago.
Basically nothing in the lifetime of a planet.
Yeah. But it feels like it's now because we're seeing it now. But that would be very cool if you managed to find that. So good luck with the search. Dr. Christian Ginski is a lecturer at the School of Natural Sciences at the University of Galway. Thanks for your time, Christian.
Thank you.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
This is GOMO. This is $14.99 a month mobile for life. With GOMO, you get all calls, texts, all 5G data for just $14.99 a month, a guaranteed price for life. Switching is easy. Visit gomo.ie, sign up, and you are good to GOMO. Join GOMO, the award-winning mobile network. Unlimited data refers to domestic use only. 30-day contract applies. A once-off SIM activation fee of $14.99 applies. For full details, terms, roaming, and text fare use, see gomo.ie.